Hi, Bobby Halton here for Unimac. Now, Unimac knows there's no price that you can put on a life, including ours. Being proactive with our health and safety is non-negotiable. To protect us against cancer-causing carcinogens, we need more than just clean gear. You need a total solution with the best equipment, the best technology, and the best training. That's why the good folks at Unimac partnered with an NFPA-authorized independent service provider to offer certified training on NFPA 1851 standards. When it comes to keeping us safe and healthy, demand the total package. Get training details at unimac.com/safety. That's unimac.com/safety.
So greetings, welcome to the Women in Fire Radio Show. Today's topic is promotional process, when and how to start. I'd like to thank Fire Engineering for allowing Women in Fire to be a part of their radio show series. I'm Lisa Baker and I'm the Southwestern Trustee for Women in Fire. Today we will be discussing when and how should you prepare for a promotional process. So in our careers, we're all gonna come to a point where we begin to think about promoting. It's an important decision. Do we take the next step in our careers, our fire service career? Many members prepare diligently for a promotional process and will do quite well, while some will fall short. But before one promotes, we should do a self-assessment and ask ourselves some important questions, giving ourselves honest answers. What is my underlying motivation for wishing to promote? Is it financial, more authority, or to make a difference? So one must prepare for a position, not prepare for a test, to be successful in a well-rounded company officer, chief, or driver operator. So as we know, most fire departments employ some form of promotional process to determine who will be the best promotional candidate. This may range from a full promotional process called an assessment center to evaluate different exercises. Regardless of what exercises or process your agency uses, it's critical that you put yourself in the seat or the shoes of the position you aspire to promote long before you actually take the promotional exam. Doing so allows you to appropriately prepare for your next role. I'm very excited for our panel members today. We have an excellent group of members. We have Chief Steve Provosky. I know I pronounced that wrong. I'm sorry, Chief. Deputy Chief of Santa Clara County Fire Department. He's also president of Code 3 Fire Training and Education. He's a fire technology instructor at Chabot College, which is in Hayward, California. And he's the author of books, The Future Firefighter Preparation Guide and How to Excel at Fire Department Promotional Exams. We have Deputy Chief Latasha Clemens, who's the Deputy Chief of the Forest Park, Georgia Fire Department. Previously, she served as a Deputy Chief in Boynton Beach, Florida for over 23 years. We have Lieutenant Heidi Simon, who's a lieutenant with the South Metro Fire in Colorado. And she has 24 years in the fire service and she's a paramedic. We have retired Chief Catherine Rittenhauer, who retired from the Aurora Fire Department in the Denver area, where she served for over 25 years. She's a past president of Women in Fire. She's also on the IFAC Bully Behavior Prevention Task Force. And we have retired Captain Angie Hughes, who retired from the Baltimore County Fire Department with over 25 years of service. She's also a past president of Women in Fire. And Angie was the keynote speaker at FDIC 2017. She's also the co-founder of the Baltimore County Women in Fire Service. Welcome to everyone. And I appreciate your being here and thank you. So we'll go ahead and start off with Chief Steve. If you don't mind, I could just say Steve.
Keep it simple.
Okay. So if a member were to ask you when and how to prepare for a promotional exam, what advice would you offer to them?
Well, good question. When and how to prepare? I think the how to, I'll start with the easiest, and I know it sounds easy to some, but how to prepare, don't just prepare for the test itself like most do, prepare for the position. Meaning if you're a firefighter aspiring to be a company officer, yeah, it's important to understand what's on the testing process because you'll have to go through that and be successful. But more importantly, prepare for the position. Because if you prepare for the position, it shouldn't matter what they throw at you during the promotional process because most departments have some form of promotional process, whether it's a written test or a full-blown assessment center. So prepare for the position is the how part. And regarding the when part, it's never too early. Obviously, when you get hired, you got to be the best you can be to make sure you pass your probationary period and learn your craft, learn your trade. But what I believe in is, like, we just had a recruit class graduate about 2 months ago. And, you know, here they are fresh out of the academy, ready to start probation. You know, my fire chief, myself, we're out there basically encouraging them, obviously, get through what you got to get through. But more importantly, it's never too early to start preparing for the future, because your career goes by fast. So never too early, and prepare for the position.
Thanks, Chief. I can't agree with you more on that. Chief Latasha?
Yes, I think that's an excellent question. And I certainly most agree with what Chief Steve has already articulated. But in my mind, in promotion and preparing for promotion starts the minute you walk in the door. You're already promoting yourself once you decide that you want to take on this this career. I know for sure you thrive on change and taking on new challenges. You demonstrate that you want to be a part of a change-making process. Those are most certainly some signs that you are ready and want to be promoted. And how do you prepare? You're preparing yourself day one. You're always learning the next step up, not just the job that you're doing. You're definitely learning the next step up, whether that's a lieutenant, and when you're a lieutenant, you're a captain of battalion chief, and all the way up. Know all your rules, your policies and procedures, your standard operating guidelines, the city's policies and procedures. These are all steps to assist you in preparing for promotion. You have your formal education, which is most certainly important and a part of that promotional process. But you also have all those technical courses and curriculums, those conferences that you can attend, such as Women in Fire, if you're a woman in the fire service, and FDIC and FRI and all those different conferences and networking events that you can learn from some of the best and some of the greatest. So these are ways that and when you should start from your process of promotion.
Thank you, Chief. Lieutenant Heidi, Simon?
Well, I agree with both chiefs that have spoken already. I really want to hit on something that Chief Steve said about from the day you start, really addressing and becoming the best you can be in every position that you take on, from rookie, probationary firefighter, just even in the academy, having that growth mindset in every position and never ruling out the position that is a lateral position to you or a position above. And if you take that growth mindset, you'll be in this situation where you can then start to continue to grow into that position. And I also, the other thing I want to say is, act as if you know you want to promote or you think you want to promote, take on some of the qualities of the leaders above you that you see and try to emulate those in your way, so that you are doing what Chief Steve said, you're preparing for the position, not just the test.
Heidi, you made a good point. You could learn a lot from watching current company officers, battalion chiefs and such, of what you aspire to be and what you aspire not to be as well.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Chief Catherine Reidenhauer.
Okay. Of course, I agree with everything that's been said, but I'll take it a little bit different step and say, I think it's really critical that candidates take the old Socrates advice and know thyself. Oftentimes, you know, we'll hear the advice, you need to be yourself, whether it's interviews or assessment centers. And I find that people really don't understand or don't know sometimes how to be authentic. And so one of my recommendations would be to take some introspection time and create an oral interview. An oral resume. Create an oral resume and do it. In the old days, it was very much expected, and then it fell out of vogue, and then it's kind of came back a little bit. But you know, when you look at your KSAs, you know, of course you're going to do your list. You're going to make a list of certifications, your accomplishments, volunteer work, leadership positions, education, training, etc. But it is not about a list, because the person with the most check marks does not win. It's really about how those skills and knowledge and abilities will make you the best candidate. And so I think when to start is by creating those lists and really understanding yourself and what you bring to the position. What are your unique qualities? What are your best traits and characteristics? What are things you need to improve on? And also, I think a great way to look at it is always ask the so what question. So what that means is, who cares about anything that's on the list? I don't care if you have a master's degree. It is the so what. How does it relate to the position? So oftentimes people that have just gone so much out of their way to do additional training, et cetera, really don't understand how to articulate that in an assessment center setting. And I don't really care what the exercise is. You can always interject yourself into it. So it's how what you've done relates to the position and how it adds value, how you can add value to the position. So I always recommend creating an oral resume and actually doing it in front of some trusted colleagues and understanding how important it is. So what? I don't care if you have that master's degree. How does it relate to you being a better officer or for whatever position you're going for?
Thank you, Catherine. Angie?
Geez, I don't know if you left anything for me, folks. just a couple of things that I think about. When you think about the when aspect of it, clearly your department's going to have guidelines to say when you're eligible for things. I don't think anybody ever feels ready to take that next step. So the when would be when your department says, if you have to be a 5 years as a firefighter before you can take lieutenant, then it's clearly specified and you should shoot for those goals. As to the how, we're on the East Coast, at least, I don't know if it's the same for everybody, there's specific certifications. So if a new firefighter came to me and said they're looking to promote to battalion chief, I would say, okay, that's a great goal to have, but look, you know, what do you need for lieutenant? What do you need for captain? And working your way through that, because there's going to be some educational aspect as well. And I'm going to plug Steve's book, because I used his How to Excel in Promotional Processes, and it helped me, and I did very well.
Thanks, Angie. Thank you for that. You all had some really good information. I know when I first joined the fire service, and if some people would say, you know, I want to be a company officer, and the old adage was, well, learn how to be a good firefighter first. But you're learning every day to be, like Chief Steve said, as you first walk in the door, and Latasha said as well, as you first walk in the door, you're learning, and you should be preparing yourself. And I think, Latasha, you mentioned a good point where you said, when you first come in, you're kind of like auditioning already. I mean, I'm sure we've all been in departments where all of a sudden somebody that wasn't engaged in the fire in the department at all, now all of a sudden they want to be a lieutenant when there's policies and procedures and stuff named after them. So it's kind of like, how's this member going to be an effective officer when they never really followed the rules and regs themselves? So I appreciate your answers. So we'll start with Angie this time. So when someone asks you how to prepare for a promotional process, do you ask them what motivates them to promote?
Sure. I mean, that's a good thing. I think in any aspect of your life, you have to know your why, what drives you, what motivates you, what is going to push you to be the best that you can be. So absolutely, you have to know your why. And if it's for money, okay, but you need to be the best person and be the best officer that you can. So it's pretty simple in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree. Catherine?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think most people, I would hope, are in it for the right reasons, that they want to affect positive change and that they want to be, the positive influence on the crew or on the battalion. And we all know that that's that doesn't pay out oftentimes, but it goes back to also really knowing and understanding why you want that job and what you think you can do in it. And Steve made a great point about, you know, you put yourself in the seat, and so many people only get to that point that they're working so hard on the preparation aspect for the position that they never really get it that, hey, wait a minute, now I'm going to be in charge. How am I going to handle, you know, all the emergency calls? And, you know, how am I going to handle personnel issues and all the other things that go with it? And hopefully their motivation is good. But I think it's a great place to start when you're mentoring. When you're mentoring someone is ask, so exactly why are you going to do this? And a great question is, in 1 year, how will your crew describe you as a company officer or as a battalion chief? Because it sets them up to really see it from a different light of how people would be talking about them in that position. So it might help them to get a different perspective on their motivation.
Thank you. Heidi?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said. I think the only other thing I would add is not just your why you want to be a company officer or whatever position you're pursuing, but what motivates you? Because what motivates me as a company officer, and the reason that I became a company officer, was that I wanted other people to feel empowered to be the best they can be. And I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to help people grow and develop. And that's what motivates me every day. And when I don't have people around me that are like that, I get very stifled. And if I worked for an officer that wasn't like that, or a chief that wasn't like that, I get equally as stifled. I think that motivation, what is motivating you to do this? Because that will maintain your integrity as an officer.
Thanks, Heidi, I agree. Natasha?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what I like to start off with is set your expectations up front. I always tell people that going into the door, not just when it's time for promotion. I think I've heard it mentioned before, you know, folks are looking at what type of officer or what type of leader you're going to be based on how you set the tone for them throughout your everyday walk. So most certainly, I'm going to tell them how to promote via the career ladder and all those technical competencies. And as I mentioned before, the formal education and things like that. But what's most important is what I've heard prior is who are you as a person? What type of leader will you be? Are you somebody that someone will want to model? Are you someone that someone will want to follow? What kind of leadership are you exemplifying? There are times when you need to be that authority figure exercising leadership, but which style are you implementing and which style are you modeling from? Most certainly when I was coming up the ranks, as we've heard prior, there are those officers that you just do not want to model. They're not representing themselves effectively within the organization. They're not modeling those leaders that you see or that you thought that you want to model. So who are you? What kind of integrity are you having? What are your morals? What are those soft skills that you're bringing? You want to be a change agent. Those are some of the things that I would inquire in any person that wants to promote through the organization.
Thanks, Natasha. Chief Steve?
It's so much easier going first versus trying to follow up with all these good questions. But it's great to have the rotation. But I think, besides every great item that's been said, I'll go back to what you originally asked about what motivates them to promote, which I sort of tie that into your why. And let me just offer a shameless plug for Fire Engineering. Fire Engineering Books and Videos actually published my newest book, 101 Tips to Ace Your Promotional Exam. And thank you, Angie, for the shout out for my previous promotional preparation book. But it's funny when you mention the why, when you look at pretty much the most important thing I put in there is know your why, which I look at as motivating. I know that you can look at them two different things, but if you go into this process knowing what motivates you and knowing what your why is, it's going to make things a lot easier and a lot clearer, because if you can't answer those questions, you're maybe in it for the wrong reasons. And we've all seen people probably in our own departments, not to mention other departments, that occasionally get promoted for the wrong reasons or are going into the process for the wrong reasons and sometimes get promoted and realize this isn't for me. And that's the unfortunate part. I know it's it's hard to sometimes know what you don't know if you're not in the position yet. But like a few people already mentioned, you know, talk to those that are in the position, research the position. But I think it's critical to find out what motivates you and what your why is, because I think that'll really help provide genuine answers from the heart. And we're not just checking the box here. And I mean, that was mentioned as well. It's come at it with a very sincere process of trying to do it for the greater good of the organization. And I think knowing your why will definitely benefit the entire department.
No, I agree with you. I just recently actually did an assessment center and their chief came and spoke to us. And he kind of stated the same thing, is that they were concerned that some people may be promoting for the wrong reason because there were so many openings within that organization for the positions available at that point. But you all made some really good points.
Can I add one more comment on that,
Chief? Yes, Baker? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you for that. We're in the process here of doing a promotional process here for part for all three ranks, lieutenants, captains, and battalions. And one thing that the fire chief mentioned to all the members is, if you are here to keep things the same, meaning that same old bad culture, that same old poor leadership, then do not even take the test. Do not take the test. And I think I just heard Chief Steve say, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, you might as well walk out the door. Don't do it at all. So I thought I just want to add that little punch in there. Thank you.
No, I appreciate that, Latasha. So our next question is, we're going to start with Catherine, is, do you feel having a career goal path in an organization would be beneficial for someone that has aspirations to promote so they know the career goal path?
Right. So, Lisa, this is interesting because I don't think many organizations have that well-defined career path to everything. And I think that is such a great idea that organizations actually give people the outline of what it takes to do everything. I mean, not only is it, having a good job description and knowing the testing particulars, but wouldn't it be great if all organizations said to the new members coming in, is this is what our expectations are throughout your career. And even regardless if you ever take a promotional process or not, we still have high expectations. So when I looked at that question about career goal paths, I just thought, wouldn't it be great if organizations had the expectations laid out, not necessarily as maybe mundane as a job description, but really clearly defined the expectations for each rank and how to get there. Right. Yeah. I think that'd be great.
No, I agree with you. I mean, a lot of organizations that I'm aware of, they just kind of say you have to have 3 years in this rank to be this and 4 years to be that and such. So thank you. Angie, same question. Angie?
You caught me off guard.
Oh, that's all right. Sorry about that.
No, I think that's a really great question, because when you look at departments, so where I come from, there's 1,000 members and in a career department, and even in a small department, you can't, when you set up your goals and you think about SMART goals, there's one aspect that you can't control, and that's when the positions are going to be available. So, you know, thinking about those goals and knowing that they're a little bit out of your control, I think is really helpful, but set your 5, 10, 15 year goals, because you're just going to continue to build and you're going to continue to get better. That's one of my biggest regrets, is I waited way too late into my career because I was just having fun and, you know, just being me. And when I realized it was time for leadership, I was 15 years into it out of a 30 year career. So that's my thoughts.
Thanks, Angie. Heidi?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I went through a dead spot. I am going to probably defer most of my answers when we talk to the professional development part, but Andy, you just hit on something that really struck a chord to me that I definitely want to reiterate, and that is, do some goal setting early in your career and revisit that frequently so that you can kind of keep track of where you're at, because I also waited too long to promote and am watching my rookie firefighters from 10 years ago become battalion chiefs. And I'm struggling to move forward. So it's, don't wait. You will grow into the position, but you also, if you revisit your goals frequently and set goals, you will be prepared for the position. So I just completely agree with you, Andy.
Latasha?
So definitely having career goals in an organization is most certainly beneficial, as most of them outline the department's expectations of how they would like you to be to represent their organization. However, setting your own personal goals based on how you want to be represented, a representative not only of the organization, but as the community as well, and what those goals entail. You know, those goals entail your, how, what kind of leader you want to be, your formal and informal education. Most certainly, you got to set those goals. Those goals define the high expectations that you're going to have for yourself. Remember, folks are looking at you first. Folks are modeling who you are, what you say. So most certainly, goals are very important. Thank you. I digress.
Thanks. Chief Steve?
You know, it's interesting, the career goal paths or career development, if you were to Google those words, you know, fire department, career development, you don't find much of anything out there. It's one of those rare things. And like you mentioned, Chief Baker, is like every department's got it lined up of, you know, X amount of years in this rank and maybe some training and education or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's about it, just to qualify. The next question of how do you not just qualify, but be successful, not just in the promotional process, but in the position, is that harder part of, you know, there's many right ways to be successful in any career. And I think that's the one struggle that we have. And I think really having a career goal path with maybe different options or suggestions is extremely beneficial. It's just the sad thing is I don't care where you're at around the country. The job of a company officer, chief officer, is not that drastically different. I mean, there may be slightly different variances or nuances within our respective agencies or regions, but you know why there's, and I don't want to say why there's not a national concept, because FEMA and the National Fire Academy have published some big picture generic, you know, sort of like roadmaps related to getting yourself, say, from firefighter all the way up to fire chief. So I'm not going to knock that because I think those are beneficial, but I definitely think they can, you know, in our respective agencies, we can all probably do a better job of trying to help mentor and guide those that have those aspirations sooner in the career versus later in the career, when it's sometimes very tough to have to track down classes or spend time away from your family or whatever else, just to maybe get that position you want.
Uh-huh. I'm going to kind of follow up on that question with, I'm going to start with you, Steve, is do you feel that having class, so once a promotional exam list comes out, do you feel it's beneficial that the agency gives some classes prior to promoting the individual, like a 40-hour or 80-hour, however you want to do, say a class, kind of an officer class before they actually, or a chief's class before you actually put them out in the companies? Or do you feel it's more beneficial they go out and kind of learn on the fly, so to speak, and then bring them down to the training division periodically to do some stuff with them?
Yeah, I don't think there's one right answer. I'm very passionate about training. I would think the prior to promotion, not just to mention maybe prior to the test, would be the most beneficial, because if we had some type of program before even the test, we may have a higher success rate on the test versus just now you're promoted, you're in the position, and then, you know, a year or two later, oh, by the way, take this class, which can be very challenging. I remember when I was promoted, one of our former chiefs jokingly used to tell people like, hey, here's the badge, don't screw it up. And he was a great chief. And I joked them, I go, don't I get the line that, you know, here's the badge, don't screw it up, because you'll do fine, kid. And I have faith in you. Otherwise, I wouldn't have promoted you. I'm like, well, I appreciate that, boss. But, you know, and we've come a long way. Is what we recently did pre-pandemic was schedule an officer's academy. We struggled with, and it was basically a 80-hour, two-week academy, 40 hours and 40 hours. What we struggled with is that, well, our classroom only fits so many people. And again, this was pre-pandemic. And it was one of those things that, you know, when we have a captain's test, we may get 25 people take the captain's test. We may only have anywhere from 10 to 15 pass after the entire process is done. And it's like, well, if we have it before, are people going to want overtime for it? Will people take trades for it? The 4896 schedule sometimes can be challenging because, you know, depending if people live out of the area, depending on what the class schedule is, because we can't do it on a shift schedule, it has to be Monday through Friday, it can be very challenging for attendance. So we thought of all these different things, and what we ended up deciding on is that, okay, for those that actually make the promotional list, not everyone gets, it's not always the great badge giveaway. Sometimes everyone gets promoted, sometimes it's a fraction of the people on the list. But anyway, what we determined was let's resurrect an officer academy that we used to do probably 25 years ago. It's a two-week academy, as I mentioned, and it's once the list, so like this 2 years ago when the list was published in December of 2019, we had already planned on a January, 1 week in January, 1 week in March or February, just to break it up a little bit. And for those that were on the list, we told them, okay, we will cover your spot if you're on duty or pay you overtime, because we knew that even if they didn't get promoted right off that list, odds are they're going to get promoted off. They'll take the next test more than likely and get promoted. So, and then we won't have to worry about them on the next go around. And that seemed to work pretty well for the previous testing process. Then of course, our last captain's test, COVID hit. So we've had to put that on hold, but yeah, in a perfect world, I think if we could catch people, what ideally before you could open it up to people, but then there's always that, well, I want overtime for this and I want time off for this. And it'd be great to do all those things, but the stars don't always line up for a number of reasons.
Latasha?
Absolutely. I tell you what, I come from an organization back in Florida, Boynton Beach, Florida, where we had every 2 years, we conducted officer candidate school for those employees that were aspiring to be officers. And what did that school entail? It entailed human resource management skills, you know, some technical skills, some lessons learned from the fire marshal's office, you know, whether it's your investigations and things of that nature. Some lessons from the communications, your dispatch division, and many other, in budget, fire administration, and many other facets of the organization. I heard Chief Steve say we have to do a better job at how we're mentoring our future officers. And that requires going above and beyond and not just focusing on what is needed interdepartmental. In order to be a successful officer, you're going to have to be well-rounded and well-grounded. I think I heard Ms. Catherine says, knowing yourself, identifying who you are as a person, as a leader. So more certainly those career goals have to be developed and defined more than just what your organization offers or requires you to. So yes, we definitely need to do a better job at it. And having that officer development program is important. I'm here in Forest Park now, and we've just given a promotional process to our lieutenants. And what I'm finding is there is a variation in how our men and women are grasping something as training as a process, as an assessment center. Every organization does things different. The assessment center is new here to Forest Park. So I'm finding some tools and some ways to mentor and look at some organization development of how we're going to ensure that our men and women are successful. So most certainly we have to do a better job at that. So career goals and setting those courses for our aspiring officers is most certainly important.
Thank you, Latasha. Heidi?
Thanks. I totally agree with both Steve and Latasha. The professional development programs, and we call them officer development classes or personal development programs that departments offer, are critical to not just maintain people's interest in career development, but also to continue the education of the officers that you've recently promoted or maybe even promoted years ago. I think that in addressing all aspects of being an officer are going to continue to help your officer corps.
Thanks, Heidi. Catherine?
Okay, I have 3 points. So one is, I was very blessed in that my department back in 92 started an officer development class that was 2 weeks long. The first week was all about emergency scenes, and the second week was called the Leadership Week, where they review policies and report writing, legal issues to include EEOC, performance evaluations. And they even had me come out and do a full day eventually on conflict resolution and role plays, which how fun was that? So I was spoiled because how the department started that was all acting officers, anyone who wanted to act up to the position of LT or captain had to have this class before they could actually do it. And then the department was able to go back and do all the promoted officers. Absolutely critical, I think, for a successful for consistency in a department, as well as doing continual officer training that was specific just for officers. We would even do specific battalion chief training, which is really important and really hard to get those chiefs to go to training. Anyone else have that problem? The second thing is there are departments, and this is rare, but back in the early 2000s, I was brought in with a friend and we did promotional training for a large, one of the largest departments in the United States. They actually brought us in to train anybody that wanted to become a first line supervisor as a 2-day class. Who does that? I've never heard of that since. What an excellent way to level the playing field. And it was just awesome. And the third thing that you can do is literally do your own. I started maybe, I think it was about 2000 maybe. I started putting on a 2-day assessment center class for members of my own department. And the department would refuse to assist in any way, which was appropriate because it was my gig, you know, it was my thing. But the community college would give us classroom space, all the anything we needed, flip charts, the, you know, projectors and everything. And it really came to the point where everybody would like call me and say, when are you doing that class? Because I would do it for lieutenants, because, you know, they're usually spaced throughout the year, at least for us. So lieutenants, captains, even did some for battalion chiefs and eventually invited another department to join us. And the people that I chose to assist with putting that on, every year they'd call me first. When are we doing it? Because it was so important to them to be part of career development for our people. And Heidi, I don't know if you ever came and helped us or not, but, you know, so even if your department isn't doing something, why can't you, especially if you're already promoted, you know, put on something as simple as a promotional prep class? What that does is it just helps people not only for promotion, but it also maybe might kickstart your department to do something in-house. So those are my points.
Thanks, Catherine. Angie?
All great points. One thing, I guess, I truly believe that you should have an officer candidate school, especially in a career department, but it has to be accredited and taught by the right people. Sometimes you can see people that come in and they're just in the good old boy pack and they may teach bad behaviors. So it's important to have something that's accredited and fair. I truly believe that this starts from the beginning when the probationary period. I feel like the company officers should be molding their people to be officers, to not only leading by example, but teaching them the skills and abilities that they need to grow. And again, this is one of my pet peeves. It has to be fair and equal. Gender specifically, I guess, is more important to me. I've been in stations where there's this star firefighter that I had to work with and I had the same certifications and the same training, but, oh, he's going to be a great lieutenant. He's going to be a great lieutenant. Well, what about, you know, being equal across the board? And on the other thing, we have to think about this, you know, when you talk about, I don't know if you're specifically talking as to career departments, but think about the volunteer stations. That's one thing that scares me, is some of these younger people just, you know, they YouTube things and use that as a training aspect for officers. It's great if they're watching Mike Campo on a fire engineering channel, but there's so many, you know, people out there that are doing different things. I had a young firefighter call me once from a local volunteer fire company, and they said, "Hey, I just finished firefighter one and they want me to ride the front seat." I said, "Well, how do you feel about that?" And they said, "You know, I've never had a real fire, so I wouldn't feel comfortable to tell them that." So, you know, looking at both aspects, I think that's really important. But absolutely in the career department, I think it's definitely something that needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree with all those answers. Those are excellent answers. I appreciate your input.
Very excellent, Angie. I love those comments.
So a lot of members, when they start to prepare for an assessment center, if your agency gives assessment centers, I believe the majority of them now are, because they've been found to be valid. They just kind of prepare for the emergency scenario, and they have a script. And I mean, I know we've probably all sat on an assessment center where they have the script and it's memorized. And even if the script doesn't fit the emergency scenario, they're talking about, it could be a bus on fire, how they're going to do something that would not pertain to a bus being on fire, because they're so set on just preparing for the emergency portion of an assessment center. But yet the majority of a company officer's job really isn't just responding to a fire. I mean, we all know that some agencies get some more fires than others, but we all kind of know that the majority of a company officer or chief officer's job is the soft skills, like the personnel issues and customer complaints and such. So how do you offer advice to somebody that comes to you and they just want to go over emergency scenarios? And Chief, I'm going to start with you, because I know that you actually teach classes on assessment center such, and you also have that excellent book that Angie referred to, How to Excel at Fire Department Promotional Exam. So if you could answer that for us, please.
Oh, I'd be happy to. And I just want to start with a short little story. One of our mutual friends, I won't say her name, but works for a big city fire department, member of Women in Fire. I remember a couple of years ago, she was getting ready to go from captain to battalion chief. So she was getting ready for the BC's test. And she was telling me about what her department was requiring as the assessment center. And she goes, "God, Steve," she goes, "can you imagine?" She goes, because she was saying there was going to be like a tactical exercise, fire ground simulation, which is a very, you know, common, obviously, and as well as a personnel scenario problem. And she was saying something like, she goes, "Yeah, the tactical simulation is only worth, you know, like, I think like 50% or something. Whereas the personnel issue is weighted, like, I think like 25 or 30%. And she was actually surprised the fire ground scenario wasn't worth more. And I don't think she'd function as a, well, she hadn't, she was not a BC yet, but she was in for a surprise, because I go, "Actually, it should be the other way around." She goes, "What?" I go, "The personnel issue should be most of your score, with the fire ground exercise, of course, sharing importance. But think about it, the higher up we go, it's more personnel issues, not to mention leadership, administration, and so forth. But the higher up we go, and you hit the buzzword of today, soft skills is critical. And it's not just for chief officers, company officers, that's all ranks. Soft skills we know are lagging, and it's not just the fire service, it's around the country. I see studies that show that just private industries are struggling with soft skills, even with college graduates. But I digress, is that in a perfect world, if you think about it, the higher up you go, there's always the need for fire ground tactical assessment, so to speak, emergency scenario portion assessment to test one's skills, because it is important. But again, more importantly, I think, is the people skills and how do you handle people and everything else, because in most of our departments, the significant incidents are probably 5% or less of our call volume, whereas personnel issues, administrative skills are darn near 100% of what we do. So I definitely think that, I mean, and the unfortunate part is you ask most firefighters, no disrespect to the rank, because I think we were all in that position, is you ask a firefighter, what does a good battalion chief need, or even a fire chief? They need to be a great tactician, great, you know, strategy and tactics, which is good, but they tend to forget, because more importantly, they probably haven't walked in the shoes of a company officer or a chief officer or a fire chief to realize, wait, it's more than just the strategy and tactics. There's a lot of people stuff that I'm going to get slammed with, and I can screw up royally, not to mention you can't screw up a fire, but you can really screw up a personnel issue. At least on a fire, you've got multiple officers to assist you if you make a bad decision usually.
Yeah, it's the bad decision on the personnel issues and stuff that's getting the agencies in trouble.
Affirmative.
Latasha?
Wow, this is such a loaded question, and Chief Steve just highlighted so many different variances in this question. Most certainly, fire departments are getting in trouble because they lack of the soft skills. How are we treating our members? Even rookies walking in the door, are we really telling them to continue to keep their mouths closed and their heads down? To me, that's where the bullying starts. That's where the bullying starts. Soft skills start with how we treat others. You know, we like to say treat others how you want to be treated, but treat others how they should be treated. You know, we all have, most of us have family members, children, sons, daughters that are coming into this organization. How do you want those, your members to be treated when they come in the door? No longer are the days where we're just going in, kicking in the doors and putting the wet stuff on the red stuff. We're dealing with Miss Susie and Miss Sally that we're out there serving. If we don't correct those behaviors internally, how are they going to be treating the public? How are they going to treat the public? So most certainly soft skills are most certainly important when we're talking about assessment centers and promoting through the officer rank. That's why we have all the sexual harassment and all these different negatives that are shaking the balance in our organizations. We got to get away from just kicking doors down and getting the wet stuff on the red stuff. We have to start teaching soft skills, how we manage people. In our promotional process, we see where most members fail, and they fail on those human resource management skills. So we have to go back to our officer development training prior to being promoted and starting to be promoted. How are we training our members prior to? We have to correct some of these behaviors. You know, the culture of the fire service is shifting. No longer the days are folks going to tolerate bad behavior. So we as officers and those are in the leadership position, we have to start looking at that and dissecting it and drilling down and correcting those behaviors. Thank you.
Thanks, Latasha. Heidi?
Okay. Well, this is a really big topic. And I start most of my officer candidates that I work with on this specific skill, soft skills. And I think that Catherine nailed it early on when she said, know thyself. It is about knowing yourself and knowing your strengths and weaknesses so that you can impart that example on the people that you are mentoring. I think that you have to spend a significant amount of time on continued professional development. Personal development, not just professional development. And a few books that I recommend, particularly if you're struggling in this area, is the Emotional Intelligence 2.0 book takes a really good look at the four aspects of emotional intelligence and helps you to address some of the areas that you're weak, and then also can give you ideas on how to impress upon the people that you're mentoring, how to improve in some of their weaknesses as well. Dare to Lead is another fabulous book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And quite frankly, any John Gordon book is something that is going to help you to realize what your purpose is as an officer and how you can continue to get the best from your people in a really positive team environment. So I think that's what I try to do with, I try to do that with my entire crew, not just the people that want to promote. And I really impart that on my newer probationary firefighters early on in their career, kind of on that career development path, even before they know it. I just think it's super important.
Thanks, Heidi. Catherine?
Okay, so kind of getting back to how most people prepare the most for the emergency scenario portion. And really everyone wants to ace the tactical. They seem to put more value on it, like what Steve said, and the reality is it's the tactical is actually the easiest one to prepare for. We have policies, we have procedures, we have good methodologies on once you get on scene what you do. And but too many people lose sight of the big picture. When you look at it, it's still the same. Less than 1%, and it's actually far less than that, of your time on the job will ever be spent on the fire ground. And I'm not saying it's not important, because I want totally 100% competent and safe people on the fire ground at all times. But when you look at the big picture is not necessarily the tactical skills. We have so many, typically we have so many people on scene that we can cover up some of maybe our bad judgment or mistakes. But the reality is I think Tosh, well, everyone's really touched on this, the people skills, your leadership skills, your ability to handle problems and conflict. I'd almost say that conflict resolution and handling personnel problems is probably the number one skill that anybody should have in the fire service. And yet it's the one that I see we do the least training on. You need to know your admin functions. If you can't write a decent report, you probably aren't going to, another area. And Tosh also mentioned, where do company officers fail? And definitely what I see is that it's not on the fire ground. Brand new officers or acting officers will do a good job because that's what they study. That's what they focus on the most. But where do they fail is typically dealing with the issues that come up in the firehouse. And, I'll just bring up a kind of a fun point, but in my personnel problem solving classes, in the course description, it always has this: the hottest fires I've ever fought were not on the fire ground. They were in the firehouse. And I think each person here would 100% have to agree with that. And so going beyond just what the emergency scene skills that we need to be good officers is critical, because the best officers I worked for were by far the ones that had a handle on their crew, how to motivate them, how to keep them in line, and understanding the discipline process of a department and how critical that is to make sure that everyone follows the rules. So, because your job as an officer, I mean, it goes back to that. If everyone follows the rules, wouldn't it be a great place to work? So I love this question, because everyone wants to ace that tactical, but that is such a small portion of our job.
Thanks, Catherine. Angie?
I'm not mastering this mute button today. I think it's such an important skill, and the transition from, to a blue shirt to a white shirt is a big deal. And when I coach people for the oral interviews and assessment centers, the one thing that always shocks them is I say, you need to have empathy. And they're like, what? I mean, everybody thinks there's this mindset that you just need to go in and you just need to stick it to people in a disciplinary setting. And that's not true. And as our fire service gets more diverse, we have to understand different cultures. We have to look at our problems and make sure we have the knowledge to answer the questions that need to be answered and problems that need to be solved, and ensure that we're consistent too. And in the end of it, relating, being able to relate to the person and having that empathy and putting them on the best plan for training or performance improvement plan, whatever it is, to make them a better employee is the ultimate goal, not to break them down, make them feel terrible. You're never a failure till you blame someone else. And everybody that, we all make mistakes and you learn from them. So I think that's a really important aspect of soft skills. So absolutely.
Thanks. Y'all made some really excellent points. And Catherine, you brought up the topic of written. And I know more and more assessment centers now, especially at the battalion chief's level, are actually having a written portion on their test. And I know a couple of people lately have come to me and asked to prepare. And I'm like, well, be prepared to write, a letter. And even with our lieutenants and such that we're preparing, and they don't understand why that's important. But the the younger generation, I mean, they write letters or emails or such, like they're doing a text, like four is the letter four, and you, instead of Y-O-U, it's you. And, you know, I try to explain to them that, you know, these emails that are on the city settings are public records, and it's an agency could look very, get embarrassed when an email is released and it's the for you and it's the number four and the letter U, as opposed to writing out F-O-R and Y-O-U. So Chief Steve, do you, if someone was to come to you and ask you how to prepare and such, and we've kind of broached this a little bit, but do you steer them towards they need to be able to write professionally and that it's in a professional manner and such?
Oh, I think the term we've used, yes, I do. And the term soft skills, I think that all of us have thrown around. We're all recognizing that it's one of the biggest things that we need to focus on. And of course, soft skills, we all know, are problem solving, listening skills, communication skills, which include oral and written communication, you know, decision-making, critical thinking, all those things. You know, those are the types of things, especially like you mentioned, written communication skills, because you hit the nail on the head. I, like all of us, have probably seen people write emails that looks, they write an email like they text something and they don't have that edit feature to realize, wait, exactly, a text is one thing, but an email is a different thing. And you mentioned Public Records Request Act, not to mention just professionalism. You know, you throw that to somebody that may get forwarded to maybe a city official, a council member, or somebody outside the department, and it can unfortunately look negatively upon us. And that's the part I struggle with soft skills, is that it's hard to teach those soft skills. And, you know, it's great that people have all these certifications, training, education, experience, but it's trying to recognize early on how to point people in the right direction, whether it's taking writing classes, communication classes. You know, a degree is great. It doesn't guarantee success, because we all know people that have college degrees, even masters, that maybe don't have the street smarts or the people skills. But, you know, I think soft skills are critical for success, especially like you mentioned, written communication, and the higher up you go, because especially we're more scrutinized.
Yes. Thank you for that, Chief Steve. I think that Angie and Catherine both kind of hit on the portion of discipline in an assessment center. And Angie, you hit it right on the head when you say people want to go right to disciplining somebody in a situation. And I don't know if they're thinking that's because that's what the assessors are looking for, or that's just they don't understand what the problem is. But so I'm going to go around, and if anyone has anything else to add, I'd appreciate it. So we'll start with Steve. And once again, Steve has that book, and I encourage everybody to buy his newest book, How to Excel at the Fire Department Promotional Exam.
Actually, sorry to correct you there. That was the one I published back in 2014. Oh, my bad. So that's okay. No, since it is a fire engineering podcast, I want to make sure I get the appropriate plugins, since they were kind enough to publish. No, that's okay. My previous book, How to Excel at Fire Department Exams, is still available off my website, Code 3 Fire Training, but the latest one is really more of a leadership book, 101 Tips to Ace Your Promotional Exam, because it really focuses on obviously helping one prepare for the test, but also for the position, as well as just a lot of good general tips. So to try to sum up things, you know, getting promoted in the fire service especially isn't getting any easier. I'm not saying process-wise, I'm saying position-wise, because I think we all recognize that being a leader in today's world, private industry, public government, fire department, is not any easier than it used to be. I think it's getting more challenging. Not to say that's a bad thing, because we need good leaders to handle the challenges. But I think for those individuals, there's a lot of opportunity for those that are looking to promote. And hopefully the key is doing it for the right reasons, to ultimately serve the community, but also serve those that you're going to be fortunate to lead. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that are in leadership positions that are maybe calling it in, phoning it in. And, you know, my hat's off to anybody that wants to put their hat in the ring to be able to step up and attempt to make things better for the right reasons. So good luck to all those that are out there, but just realize it's a lifelong journey and we never stop learning.
Thank you, Chief. Latasha?
Yeah, you know, going from buddy to boss is not a smooth transition. You're going to have those obstacles that stand before you. You're going to have those challenges, but most certainly it's one of the best decisions that you can make throughout your career, particularly if you want to be a decision maker and a change agent in your organization, not in your organization, but in the community that you serve, because Remember, it's not about you. Take I out of it. Take the ego out of it. It's about serving the people. Stay mission focused. I like to say enlighten, educate, and then result to that word I don't like to use, which is enforcement. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. Heidi?
Well, I'm going to also make a little shameless plug for the Women in Fire Conference that hopefully will go forward in September. And I'm going to be teaching two classes, one on inbox promotional prep classes and one on role playing and the dimensions of role playing. Both of those classes, I focus very much on the soft skills and this, not just the daily operations, but in those daily operations, how those soft skills and are about 80% of what we do every day, if not more. So not just maybe look into those classes that I'm going to be teaching, but look into the conference, particularly for not just for the women that are listening to this, but for the women and men that are supporting women in the fire service. I highly recommend you come and be a part of it. I know Chief Steve, I believe you have taught there before, and I would love to see you there again. So,
yes, I have. So thank you.
Likewise. Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think that we are. This panel is in the business of empowering others and developing great leadership to follow us and to be better than us. And so, thank you for including me on this, Chief Baker. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Catherine?
Oh, okay. Well, kind of going back to preparation, that is the key. There is no wasted time when you are preparing for an assessment center, regardless if you get the position or not. That is critical because the moment you step into the seat or the position, it's a whole different ballgame. So preparation is key. And like a co-instructor of mine always used to say, there are no poor candidates. There are only poorly prepared candidates. And I think that is very true. So it's the whole area, the whole big 360 picture, the whole enchilada, so to speak. It's not just one area you need to focus on. It's everything. And look every day for opportunities to increase your speaking skills, your decision-making skills, your leadership skills, practicing. So that's what I would leave with.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I want to thank my panel as well. They gave some excellent information. And I believe, Steve, you do teach a class at FDIC on assessment centers as well.
Yeah, no, actually not this year. I've done FDIC for the last 10 years teaching. This year, I've got one pre-conference class as well as a classroom class on my Courage Under Fire leadership session, more bigger picture leadership stuff. So hopefully this year was not promotional preparation, but hopefully I'll also be able to do that again next year if all goes well, but definitely be out there.
Thank you
for the opportunity.
So I'd like to thank each guest for being a part of the radio show. I'd like to thank Fire Engineering again for allowing Women in Fire to be a part of the radio show. Thank you to all our listeners and members of Women in Fire. And please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and check out our website on womeninfire.org. And thank you